Hi, everybody. This is Amy Messersmith. I'm an associate director for two opportunity programs here on campus, HEOP and SSS. And I'm super excited to be collaborating with Syracuse University's career services staff. Our goal is to do eventually a podcast series that focuses on various topics related to a lot of things. Whether it be the job search process or processing your own interests and interpreting that into, you know, a job that might fit your strengths and your values, and so on and so forth. And so what we thought was for this first episode is just to get to know the career services staff a little bit before we invite some students to the table. So I'm going to invite my guests to go around and introduce themselves, and then we'll take it from there.
Thanks, Amy. My name is Kate Mercer. I am a career exploration specialist in Central Career Services. I've been in the role for about 4.5 years now, and tomorrow I will be celebrating my 8-year Syracuse University workiversary, as LinkedIn likes you to brand it.
Let's see, I think this is...
Woo-hoo. Yay. Oh, I love it.
That's great. My name is Dan Pack. I'm also a career exploration specialist over at Central Career Services. I've been there a little over 6 years now, and my SU career life is much longer than that, but we'll get into that later.
So I think the first question we're going to start off with, and I think this is a really important question, is why? Why career services? What attracted you to this kind of work?
So I sort of fell into career services. I, from a very young age, wanted to be a teacher. I had planned on being an English teacher. I'm the child of two elementary school teachers, and I thought that that was going to be my path too. I studied English literature and adolescent education, and went into teaching for a couple of years and realized that it was not what I had dreamed it would be. And I decided to get a job at Syracuse to kind of reorient myself. So I wanted to do kind of a 9-to-5 where I could just kind of punch the clock and work on a master's degree in the evening. And so I got a job as a office coordinator in the College of Law's Career Services office. And within 2 months of my time there, the longtime assistant director took a different job on campus. And we were getting to a really crucial time in the academic calendar where somebody needed to be in that position. And so my supervisor kind of tapped me and said, buckle up, like it's time to learn how to do, you know, this job, which required a lot of, required meeting with 1L students and talking to them about what their summer plans were going to be. It was a lot of data collection for the American Bar Association for the college's accreditation process. So it was like serious stuff that I had to, you know, work on. And I sort of fell into loving it. And I had that role for about 2 years when a colleague in the College of Law's advancement office took an opportunity in Central annual giving and was building up a new team of development associates, essentially people who are doing discovery work in fundraising. They are meeting with anybody and everybody to make the case for support and identify people who major gift officers have maybe overlooked or didn't suspect would be interested in giving. So I joined that inaugural team and spent 2 years traveling, mostly in the Rust Belt, but occasionally down to Florida and the Carolinas, and met with over 200 alumni. Yeah, and met with a lot of really fascinating people who had really, really interesting stories. And I loved the meeting with people part. I didn't love the asking for money part. That never got comfortable for me. And I got kind of sick of traveling all the time. And so I And I also felt like, you know, I'm at a university and I had gotten so far away from working with students. And that had always been what I wanted to do, even if it didn't, you know, even if it wasn't in the form of teaching in front of a classroom. So in August of 2019, I came over to the Office of Career Services, and I've been here ever since. And I feel like sort of my zigzag path allows me to speak with students in a real way. Like, nobody is a kindergartner being like, I want to be a career advisor. And so I think you need to have some real life experience in order to talk about career exploration and identifying your interests. And as you said, your values, you know, and kind of being playful about it while you're in college. So, yeah, I love it. I love my job.
So I have two questions, actually. The first is, when you were talking about, you know, wanting to be a teacher, majoring in English, and then kind of pivoting towards something else, not exactly sure what you were going to do at that point after deciding that teaching wasn't for you. Can you talk a little bit about what that process was like to shift from the identity of I'm going to be a teacher to kind of a transition into the unknown?
Yeah, it was a really painful process for me. I mean, being a teacher was part of my identity. My senior yearbook, like, all my friends were writing, like, I can't wait for my kids to have Miss Mercer as their teacher.
Wow.
I mean, seriously, it was like, that was what I was going to do. You know, and there were inklings in college that I was, you know, starting to have doubts that, you know, it wasn't going to be as, like, Dead Poets Society as I had dreamed it would be. You know, this was sort of the beginning of the Common Core era. And, you know, in our courses, we're learning about how to write lesson plans, how to write unit plans, how to meet the needs of all of your students. And then I'm getting into the classroom and I'm being handed a script to read. There was no creativity. There were so many boundaries. And my first teaching experience was in the Rochester City School District. And prior to that, all of my substitute teaching and student teaching experience had been in either wealthy suburban districts or like poor rural districts. And so I didn't feel equipped to meet the needs of my students on an emotional, like supportive level, and try to assign them like To Kill a Mockingbird chapters to read. It didn't click for me. But I had student loans. I received the Teach Grant, which was a binding agreement where I had to teach for 4 years out of the first 8 after I graduated in a high needs district. And if I didn't meet that, then my grants would turn into a loan. And New York State kept changing the parameters of what a high needs district was. And when I first signed up for it, all of New York State, for some reason that year, counted as a high needs, that English was a high needs subject. And by the time I graduated, the only districts that counted for me were New York City and Rochester City School District. And so I got hired in Rochester the first week of October. So I had missed the first 3 weeks of school. So the students that I was coming into had been watching movies for 3 weeks. And I come June, when I'm filling out my paperwork for the Teach Grant, they told me that because it wasn't a full academic year, that year wouldn't count at all.
Oh, my goodness.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah.
Holy
so
cow.
It was a real, like, identity reckoning for me. You know, it was extremely emotional, and I felt like I was letting people down, which is, zooming out, is like wild. Like, everybody in my life wanted what was best for me. Nobody was going to like stop talking to me or feel disappointed in me because I wasn't going to teach, even though I said I was. But I just put a lot of pressure on myself to make teaching my life, and by kind of like disentangling myself from that, I was at a really low point when I got hired at Syracuse. So I'm really grateful that things just worked out in such a happenstance way where I was able to move up really quickly and learn really quickly from great leaders and kind of fall into something that I loved. And that balance the parts about teaching that really mattered to me in the beginning without the struggles that I faced.
I wonder how much your background, because I know, and I'm sure you guys hear this all the time in terms of arts and sciences students getting the liberal arts degree, you know, what can you do with it? What's the worth? What's the value? And I wonder in your story, the extent to which having a liberal arts degree and being able to adjust and think critically and have strong communication skills, how that strong writing skills, how that played into your ability to kind of within the first couple months of this new job, being able to pick up on everything that was expected of you and for your employer to see your potential to be like, all right, you're moving up. I don't know if the dots like connect directly, but I hear that employers appreciate liberal arts students because they have certain qualities in terms of analytical skills, organizational skills, versus, and nothing against, you know, a business degree, you know, majoring in accounting, becoming an accountant, and then doing accounting kind of thing.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I love telling the liberal arts students that I work with that their major is a blessing and a curse for them because they are graduating equipped with so many of those intangible interpersonal skills, with the critical thinking skills, the communication skills, that they're qualified for a lot more than they think they are. And so, you know, they're not going to be pigeonholed into just one career path, that they have a lot of options, and that I like to frame it as an opportunity to explore what kind of jobs, what kind of industries are out there that are like excited to hire graduates and students for internships for those types of roles.
Yeah, and I think, too, if you look at, like, the World Economic Forum puts out this list every year of, like, you know, the top 10 skills that employers are looking for. 10 years ago, it was probably all technical skills, you know, programming, coding, and things like that. And if you look at the most recent ones, it's critical thinking, problem-solving, communication skills. Because the hard technical skills now, I don't need to know how to program because I can just tell my computer to create one. You know, with technology kind of going in leaps and bounds, you don't need to know how to do those technical things as much anymore. You don't need as many people to do those. You need someone who knows how to utilize those. And those are the people who come from liberal arts background, whether you're English major, philosophy, you know, all of those things are becoming more and more valuable, even in a business setting, you know, because those hard skills are just becoming less and less important for people to know how to do those things.
That is a fascinating twist in terms of career expectations.
Yeah. I remember when I first got into this job, I tried my hardest in my undergrad and my grad to avoid science and math as much as possible. But data analytics is important to, you know, talk about all these things. So I started learning Excel. Trying to learn Excel is probably a better term for it. But it's become less relevant, you know, with AI out there and being able to do all these things. So, you know, being certified in Excel isn't nearly as valuable as it was 5 or 10 years ago. It's just not, you know, and that's where the liberal arts becomes so much more valuable now than it had been, which is weird.
So Dan, do you want to share with us your why?
You know, Kate and I both have kind of the zigzag pattern, which I think kind of informs what we do. You know, for me, my zigzag started a long, long time ago, back in 86 when I first came here to Syracuse University. I came here and about halfway through my freshman year, I started working full time because my family needed money, and I started working. Eventually left school at the end of my first year and then just worked full time saying, you know, I'll go back. 25 years later, I finally made that decision to come back. And I had spent all that time really kind of bouncing around from job to job, not really thinking about what I wanted to do or why I wanted to do anything or what I was skilled at. I just kind of, you know, a friend would say, oh, they're looking for somebody over here. They need a bartender. I'm like, oh, I'll go do that. They need somebody at this pizza shop. I went and made pizzas for a while. So I did a lot of different things, eventually ended up in Los Angeles. Went out there. I had some friends who thought I would be good in the casting field because I had this. I spent a lot of time as an introvert watching TV, movies, and things like that. So they thought that would be a nice fit for me. I moved out there, worked briefly for a casting director as an assistant. That didn't work out. And during all this time, I'd been working as a server at a restaurant and becoming a manager there for about 8 years. While I was there, really nice restaurant in Malibu right on the beach. It was great. But as I got older, I realized it was a life for younger people. 12-hour days, 6 days a week. It was just got to be too much. And that was really the first time I ever took a step back and thought, okay, what do I want to do? So I took a step back, thought about the things that I enjoyed about working in the restaurant, what gave me pleasure, what made me get up in the morning and want to go in, thought about those things. And one of the things I really enjoyed working with younger people, most of the servers and bartenders were 15 years younger than I was. So working with them gave me a lot of pleasure. We had six managers there at the restaurant. Whenever there was someone who was stressed, crying, all the managers sent them to me to talk to them. And I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed talking to them about their problems, what's going on with them and things. So that kind of led me to think that I wanted to come back to school, maybe do psychiatry, counseling of some form. So I came back here, started my undergrad to finish it, graduated with my undergrad, and then went into the counseling program for a master's. Part of my program was a practicum, which I did at Career Services, and that's kind of where it hit me, that I really love this. I got to meet some really great counselors who were there, who worked with all different kinds of students. Everybody kind of had their specialty that they worked with. Those students, I got to shadow them and see how they worked, and I really loved the process of working with students. There was kind of a sense of instant gratification. You could help a student. I just really, really enjoyed that. So I was lucky enough to, while I was doing my practicum in Career Services, a position opened up. I applied and miraculously got the position. So even before I graduated, I was working full time there. So it was great. And I've been there ever since.
It's interesting to think about how you describe yourself as an introvert. And I'm thinking about the different positions you've had, which for some would be pretty intimidating. Mm. Your interaction with the public in terms of bartending, that is full of people skills. Same with serving.
Serving a little bit more, but to be a good bartender, let people talk. It's really more about nodding the head and agreeing with people. And you're not, I wasn't one of those bartenders who was out telling stories.
Okay.
Per se. I wasn't really talking about myself. From when I was younger, I'd always had a pretty fair repertoire of jokes that I could tell if need be. But generally, as a bartender, you're kind of a sympathetic ear. So I laid heavily into that aspect of it.
And then thinking about the casting, your casting, your foray into casting, that is essentially, isn't it similar parallels career counseling, right? You're looking for the strengths of the artist to fit the strengths of the role and to see if it's a fit.
Yeah. Yeah. Now that you say that, I'm thinking we talk a lot about doing a close reading of job descriptions. in things like that. And it's very similar where when you're casting a role, you really got to read the script and get an understanding of, okay, what's needed in this? What are the strengths that you're looking for? Who would be qualified for this? And those kinds of things. So yeah, there's a lot of that. And then, you know, the audition process of having someone come in and audition and you're looking at them and seeing if you can see them in a role, seeing if they have potential to do that, even if maybe they don't have a great audition. So yeah, there's a lot of that kind of evaluative thinking going into it.
It would be fun to do a podcast about fits and misfits in terms of roles and actors. Like,
yeah,
it could be like, you know, casting, you know, how well the casting director did in terms of like fitting people to roles.
Yeah, they're like just now kind of getting into awarding casting directors for like Emmys and Oscars and things like that. I was lucky enough to work for, you know, a very talented casting director. So smart and very well respected within the industry. You know, she had a lot of, I think at the time that I was there, I was doing like 2 feature films and like 3 TV shows and 1 made for TV. Like just so much going on. And I had never worked in an office before. So I basically was just kind of thrown, you know, into the deep end, which is why I eventually got fired. and she had to let me go. But like the nicest, I think that might be the only time I got let go, but it was just too much for me. You know, she really needed someone, you know, with much more experience to do that. You know, I was kind of learning the basics of it while trying to do multiple projects at the same time. It was very difficult. I remember one time I answered the phone and it was someone said, "Hey, this is Larry, is Judith there?" And I'm like, will she know what this is regarding? And it ended up being the like Oscar winning director who was working on the project. And I put him on hold and I went into her office and I'm like, "Hey, Judith, there's a Larry on the phone. He didn't tell me what it was about." She was like, "Ah." And she just, you know, panicked and like, oh my. So I think kind of that was like, you know, the beginning of the end for me at my time there. But it was a great experience, you know, to kind of get the idea. And then, you know, and one of the great things about that experience for me was I basically learned that, you know, this isn't what I want to do. You know, I got to see, even looking at her position and like, you know, that was at the time something I aspired to be, you know, her and have that position. And looking at her, I realized like that what she does doesn't really appeal to me. You know, the one part of it I love, you know, seeing people auditions, trying to find the fit and all that, but the Hollywood stuff, you know, the politics and talking to people and all that stuff, I realized I could not do that.
Yeah. The value of experience.
Yeah, that's why, you know, we are internships, volunteer work, things like that, where you can get a chance to actually put yourself in that world and see, you know, if it's something that, you know, you could do. I personally always kind of preach the idea that trying to make a big life decision on a hypothetical, you know, is tough. I think I'd like that job. Or that sounds interesting. Right. You're not getting more information than that. That's probably not the best way to make a decision.
I always get nervous when students are ready to invest in a master's degree without being in the field.
Yeah.
Because that's a lot of money. And that's a lot of, I mean, you want your master's to be a direct stepping stone into the work that you want to do.
Yeah.
And to kind of take the risk on a master's and hope that it ends up being something that you want to do. I get really nervous when I hear students considering going into graduate school straight from an undergraduate without having any kind of like summer or internship experience.
Yeah, that you know, whether it's a gap year or not necessarily 25, you know, having that gap to kind of get out and get a better understanding of things. And you know, I always tell students, I'm like, you know, you can get out there and you might take a job, just a job. You know, you want to make some money, and while you're deciding and things like that, you might find out that you really like what you're doing there. And conversely, you could get something in your field that you think you want to get your master's for and find out that, ooh, nope. So, yeah, definitely that jump from undergrad straight in, you've got to
grounded in something.
Yeah, yeah, you've got to have that knowledge.
So our next question is, why do you think students should access services at Career Services?
Well, you know, the first thing that might be most compelling is money and job opportunities. You know, getting engaged with Career Services, and statistically, the sooner you're engaged with Career Services, the more likely you are to get a job offer before you graduate, the more likely you are to find internships while you're still an undergrad. So there's that, you know, which can help you. And then there's my story. I wish I, when I was younger, had taken that step back and thought about, what do I want to do? You know, what's important to me? What am I skilled at? You know, what do I like doing? Those kinds of things. So the sooner you can start asking yourself those questions, the better you're going to be able to navigate your career path. So if you're just kind of bouncing around like I did, you're going to end up with some really good experience, but you're not moving where you want to go, which, you know, in my case worked out fine, thankfully. But exploring those kinds of things are so much better, because it can give you a better idea of classes you should be taking, internships you should be pursuing, who you should be talking to people who've been down the path that you're hoping to go down. I always tell students, you know, there's not much point in taking the first step if you don't know what you're stepping towards. So that exploration process, kind of figuring things out, you know, getting a map of what steps should I be taking, I think is really important. So getting into Career Services is going to allow you to start that process.
It takes courage to come to Career Services. It is so easy to put your head down and focus on your 15 credits and your extracurriculars and say, I'll worry about what I want to do when I graduate later. I'm so busy right now. I've got all these stimuli that are taking up all my time and my interests. It takes a lot of courage to decide to reflect and to get a map and to figure out what your next steps are going to be when you graduate. I did not go to Career Services at my alma mater until spring of my senior year. The Career Services office at my institution was like, when you walk through the doors of the student center, it was like right on the left, and it was glass walls that you could look into, and the staff were all so intimidating to me. They were walking around in suits and ties and, you know, business professional, and you know, I'm walking to my classes with like, you know, my PJ pants on. And so, you know, part of me felt like, you know, I'm not professional. I don't look the part to even enter into that space. And the other part of me was like, I don't need to go to that space because I'm going to be a teacher. There's nothing that they can tell me that'll help me because I already know what my plan is. And as I said earlier, I was starting to have doubts about whether teaching was the right thing for me. And I think I really could have benefited from, you know, a hard conversation with the career advisor about what other options there were for me. I just wasn't ready to face that yet. And part of me regrets that. But when I did finally go to Career Services, I went in for a resume review because there was a teacher job fair coming up. And I think maybe my parents encouraged me to get my resume looked at. And I was like, yeah, my resume is great. They're going to be like, wow, this is the best resume we've ever seen. Like, no notes. And that was not what happened. They ripped my resume apart and, you know, handed back a beautiful resume that talked about my my substitute teaching and my water park experience better than I ever could have. And then they gave me a lot of great tips for how to navigate that job fair that I definitely wouldn't have, you know, implemented. I ended up getting several interviews from that job fair, and I credit my Career Services office for that. But, you know, back to my original point, I think it takes a lot of courage, and I really applaud the students who come in to have those exploration conversations with us, because they could really easily put their head in the sand and just focus on the here and now, focus on getting, you know, their good grades and focus on their extracurriculars, their clubs and organizations, senses, right? But to come in and, you know, say, I don't know what I want to do, that's really scary. you know, especially when you're going to an institution that's like nearing $80,000 a year, like you're going to have loans coming up soon and you got to figure it out. So, you know, I really appreciate that students trust us to be vulnerable and have those conversations. And, you know, it means a lot to me.
I'm imagining, you know, the career counselor is just a guide, you know, you're going into this unknown space and here's somebody that, you know, can give you a sense of direction. And once students, you know, are willing to take that leap, it's going to pay off. Certainly.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I want to be seen as, a guide and an advocate and not an intimidating presence. I wear jeans to work every day. You know, I am not trying to scare students. I want career services to be welcoming and full of possibility, and me wearing like a sport coat is not the vibe for that.
Yeah. I don't think I own a suit, much less want to wear one to work. Yeah. I think being approachable for us is really important. I also think it's important that students understand that even though there are transactional things that happen in career services, I need to work on my resume, I want to practice, you know, a mock interview and things like that, don't wait for those things to pop up. You know, don't wait until the day before an interview to want to practice your interview. You know, don't wait until 12 hours before you have to send out your resume to ask someone to look at it. Just stop in, you know, especially your home school or college. You should make yourself known to your career services office. So even if you know exactly what you want to do, they should know that too. You know, they should talk to you. I mean, what are your interests? You know, all of those kinds of things. Kate and myself, if you're, you know, we're career exploration specialists. So if you're thinking about, you know, majors changes or career changes and things like that, you don't feel comfortable talking to your homeschool, like that's kind of where we are. That's our one of our major purposes for being there. But putting yourself out there, and you know, like Kate said, you know, you've got to be a little brave to do it. But you know, it's really important that you engage, you know, and talk to somebody about it. You know, even if you're sure about what you want to do, you know, just talking it through sometimes can help you think about next steps and what you should be doing. And that is a big benefit for our career services offices.
One of the things about Census is, you know, we focus on community and sense of belonging. And by reaching out to a career counselor, you're not alone. You're not doing this on your own. You've got somebody kind of walking with you through the process, and they'll be happy for you when you land the internship and you guys can kind of celebrate together because they've witnessed you from the starting point in your journey to now, you know, achieving some of your goals. And so it could be a shared experience.
Yeah. I mean, we're walking with you, and there is a chance that we can facilitate an introduction for you at, you know, for somebody at a company or an organization that you're interested in. You know, we've been doing this for so long that we've built up, you know, Rolodexes of people that we know. And so it can snowball into lots of connections and you know, community.
So our next question, and this is just kind of a fun one. What was your dream job when you were younger?
So, you know, before I solidified my identity as a future teacher, when that was probably in sixth grade, I would say in like third grade, I really wanted to be an astronomer. I had a favorite planet. It was Neptune.
Why Neptune?
It was blue. It was like the perfect shade of blue. It felt like it was very moody. Just, yeah, great planet.
I'm learning so much about you.
And then, you know, I think like most millennial girls of the Lisa Frank era wanted to be marine biologists and you know, work with dolphins. And I think around like fifth or sixth grade, science became tricky for me. And those career options started closing in on me. Like, I don't think I have the chops to, you know, work at NASA or at SeaWorld. And but yeah, those were my aspirations.
So you wanted to be out. You wanted to be in in the world, in nature, by the water,
in space, or under the ocean, just anywhere but Earth.
You just wanted to get away.
Yeah.
How about you, Dave?
Yeah, for me, I don't think it started until I was out of high school, but I really had a thing I wanted to be, you know. And for me, it was a stand-up comic. I thought that's what I wanted to do. Growing up, I had always, my mother would let me stay up late to watch The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. Kate, he used to be the guy who hosted The Tonight Show. Kate's younger than I am by a lot. So I would stay up late to watch just his monologue. She would let me stay up to watch that. And I always, you know, aspired to, you know, do something like that. So I think I was 21 maybe-ish. I started to do it a little bit here in Syracuse. There was a Funniest Man in Syracuse contest at one of the downtown bars that I ended up winning.
What? Whoa.
But
wait, rewind.
It was not a big deal. It was like a bar. They had consecutive week contest. You know, and that was essentially...
Over multiple weeks? You had to have several routines?
Oh, I did the same routine. With a little improv maybe thrown in. But it was...
I want your notes from that.
Oh, I don't think I have them anymore. If I have them, they're on an 8-track. So I did that, but it was such a stressful... thing for me to get up there. I got up there and I couldn't really hear anything. I was looking out and it was just so much for me. If I had the knowledge that I have now, looking back on it, I probably should have stopped myself and thought about, okay, what do I enjoy about this? What's my skill set? You know, what am I good at? And I would have perhaps thought more about becoming a comedy writer, maybe for The Tonight Show or one of those things, or SNL or things like that. But at the time, stand-up comedy was really, really big. This was late 80s, early 90s, Seinfeld, Drew Carey. Everybody was getting these huge multi-million dollar deals. A friend at the time who her father managed Letterman and Robin Williams. And so I thought, oh, if I can kind of start, I have an in, but I just wasn't built for it. It just much too stressful for me.
What was it about that profession that attracted you? Was it that you could give something to the audience?
I love to make people laugh. When I was all through school, I had a group of friends who, we would write stories and pass them back and forth in class and try and make each other laugh during class. And I spent a lot of time in the principal's office. We did that, and there was nothing better for me than to pass what I thought was a funny story to one of my friends and make them crack up. That made me feel really good. I remember when I first decided to tell my dad, this is after I had left Syracuse University, left college, and decided to talk to my dad and tell him what I wanted to do with my life, what my actual ambition was. And I was very leery of letting him know. My dad was a very practical person. He wanted me to take the civil service exam to become a postman. My dad was the kind of guy who, if milk was on sale at Tops and it was a higher price at Wegmans that was closer, he would do the math and figure out, well, if I drive farther, an extra quarter mile, I'll be spending gas to get to that place. And gas right now is $1.75. So if I spend that, I would do this and that. So I was terrified to tell him. I'm like, I think stand-up comedy is a great way to come with my life. But I told him that. And surprisingly, he was all for it. He was very supportive. He's like, that is great. He's like, if you can, when people get home from a hard day at work, they're stressed out, and if you can make them laugh, bring some joy to somebody's life, that's really great. And I almost passed out. I was like, oh, wow. So that was, great for me. And I like seeing other people laugh and be happy. And that's one of the things that drew me to career services. In my counseling program, you could either go to clinical mental health, school counseling, or student affairs counseling. Clinical mental health, long-term process. You see a lot of people who, you know, are mandated to be there. Same thing with school counseling, seeing high school kids. They've got to go see you. I've got to go see Mr. Pack. And with this cohort of college students, they want your help. You also get that, you know, somebody finds an internship, somebody gets a job. There's nothing that makes me happier than that. Like, I think Kate and I both keep an email folder filled with success stories from students. So yeah, it's a very selfish prospect for me. I like seeing people succeed in career services. And when I was doing that, and I still like to see people laugh, I just have a much smaller audience now.
He's the office comedian.
Last question is just, what is your hidden gem to share with students, whether on campus or in the surrounding community?
I want to talk about Oakwood Cemetery. So I live very close to campus. I live sort of on the opposite side of Oakwood. And I've walked my dog many a time through Oakwood. And it is every time I just keep my eyes peeled. There are so many interesting monuments. There's so much interesting flora there. Like, there's the American Chestnut Project, where ESF students are and faculty are working to create like a new, I guess, like hardier breed of the American chestnut tree that it's very endangered. I'm not a scientist, I can't speak to this, but that's happening in Oakwood. There is a haunted ghost trail that happens every fall, and I've been to it enough times that I can pretty much do the tour myself. If you follow, it's at Historic Oakwood, Historic Oakwood Cemetery Preservation Association. They put on a number of events. They're a nonprofit. There are local historians who will do guided tours of different sections where they'll tell you about the residents of that section and their stories and their lives. And it's full of drama and, like, you know, Syracuse's ritzy past. It's so interesting. And it's such a huge piece of land. It was originally designed, I think, by the same architect who designed Central Park. And it was built as a park. So when the first, you know, people started buying up family plots, they would start building their mausoleums and they would come and picnic there because, like, that's a piece of land that they owned. And it's, you know, green space in the city. And so there's just so much to learn with Oakwood. And it's right next, it butts up against campus. So it's really easy to kind of walk around. The other thing I wanted to talk about was my favorite restaurant in Syracuse, which is Riley's. And Riley's is on the north side. It's been around for probably about 50 years. And they have a new menu every night, a handwritten menu based on, you know, what is fresh. It is sort of like a hometown bar restaurant feel, with like big mahogany oak. I don't know what the wood is, but it's like very dark, moody wood inside in the bar. The staff has not turned over in years. Like, it's the same bartenders, the same servers. Every time I go, they remember me. So clearly the staff are treated well, you know, or else they wouldn't be there anymore. I just love bringing people there because it's not something that you experience very often elsewhere, the kind of intimacy and friendliness and, you know, just the unique meals every night. They have a dessert chef who every night has interesting cheesecakes and pies and fresh bread. So it's definitely my favorite place in Syracuse to eat.
Yum.
Well, I don't know if I can top any of that. I feel like a lot of pressure now. ghost stories and such. Yeah, for me, the first thing that pops into my head when I think hidden gems is a little Irish pub called the Blarney Stone, yes. Which is up on Tipperary Hill, where you'll find lots of Irish bars. On Tipperary Hill, we're actually recording this pretty close to St. Paddy's Day, so it's a really cool place to, you know, visit and bounce around and things. But the Blarney Stone has one of the best burgers in New York, I would say. they're always, you know, Syracuse.com always has this burger contest, you know, who's got the best burger, and Barney Stone is always right up there, if not winning it consistently. So that's a great place to go. It's just kind of a small place, you know, up on Tipperary Hill. Most people think of Coleman's when you think of Tipperary Hill, but that's kind of like where the place where Tipperary Hill tourists would go. you know, there's much better places where, like, you know, if you were someone from Syracuse like I am, Blarney Stone would be the place to go. And also right up around that area, there's a place called Brooklyn Pickle, which is a great, great place to grab. Deli Sandwich is out there. And then I always tell people Green Lake State Park is a great place to go for hiking, walks. If you can get out there, that's another great place. I don't think there are any ghosts out there. You never know. Ah, yeah, no ghost. Kate's not in for it. It's got to be a little bit of danger involved. But yeah, I think those are the places that would pop into my head.
Well, this has been really fun, and I can't thank you guys enough to come here and give us your time and your stories. And we're really looking forward to continuing these conversations, bringing students to the table, and doing a, you know, deeper dive into all things career services, whether it relates to finding your path or preparing, finding matches to your value, discovering your identity, so on and so forth. And so this will be really fun. So tune in our next episode.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, Amy. This is great talking.
Super yeah, thanks fun. For having us. We're no one's more excited than us about conversations going forward.
Fantastic. All right. Bye, everybody.